I'm an addict named Dane. My clean date is September 13th, 2013. I'm originally from this area. I tried recovery here once before. I guess I can call it a brief bit of abstinence, plus no change. And, so I'll just tell you a little bit about myself, how it was, and what it's like today. As I said, I grew up here in Indiana, Pennsylvania. Everybody pretty much knows everybody. Both my parents are addicts. My mom also suffers from some mental disorders. Paranoid bipolar schizophrenia is what she was diagnosed with. So the combination of that and being an addict, she was in and out of institutions. And my father was in jail the majority of my life. So that put me in and out of foster homes from the age of 5. So never really having a stable home. I think I went to every elementary school that's here in Indiana. So I knew a whole bunch of people. So when later in life, the junior high and high school, whenever they combined, I kind of already knew everybody. So that was the only benefit of me going to every elementary school. So I never really had a stable home, never would get too comfortable, never really open up to too many people because I was only in home for about a year, then I'd go back to my mom for about a year, maybe 2 years, then I'd be right back in another foster home. So having a healthy way to talk about my feelings and how I feel was just never happened. Until the time came where she would had to go to an extended care. Torrance is actually in Blairsville. I think she stayed there for 3 years. And I was 15 at that time, and I was adopted by my wrestling coach. And I was a good kid for the most part, and I didn't make any more trouble than the average kid. But during that time, I think my first outlet and first addiction was in sports because I could escape myself and it was something that I could take anger and frustration out of. And I've always been a bigger guy, especially when I was a little kid. I was a lot bigger than everybody else, so I was good at football. And I also joined wrestling because it was something else physical. And if I could hurt you and it was allowed, I was all for it. So I excelled at football and I excelled in wrestling. And, like I said, I didn't really make too much trouble growing up through high school, kind of coasting my way through. Drinking and smoking weed became just the norm. And again, I wouldn't really say the using was out of the ordinary for most high school kids. I graduated. I mean, I knew what drugs were, and I knew what NA was because for the short periods of time of me being with my mom, I'd be here in the meetings. Not listening, but I knew what NA was. Went on to college. Ended up continuing wrestling at Seton Hill University in Greensburg. And, so for the first time I was completely all on my own. I could make all my own decisions. And, I ended up drinking a lot more than I attended class, by choice, and, I did enough just to keep my grades above where they needed to be for me to participate in wrestling as well as stay in school. I ended up hurting my knee, but not to the point where I'd need surgery or to the point where they prescribed me anything, so it hurt. And I took it upon myself to purchase painkillers from somebody that I knew that was hurt. And so that was my introduction into opiates. And again, I don't think it was a problem at that point. I was just introduced to it. I was like, wow, this feels good. It was a short period of time. Then when I made the decision that I was no longer going to continue to wrestle, I moved back here to Indiana, transferred and went to IUP. So with a high tolerance of alcohol, moved back to my hometown, started working in bars up here as a bouncer, and kind of ran into the wrong people at the right time. That's what it was right back then. Ended up selling a whole bunch of stuff, and that just led me into more drugs that I'd never tried before. I don't really try not to get into a drug lug because we're all here for a reason. We know how to use. Things just escalated probably within a year, and somehow I kept the train on the track for another year and a half. And whenever I finally realized it was a problem, I tried quitting on my own probably for about a month with the the sub strips, and that didn't help because I found out you could put those in a needle. But yeah, I seeked help. I went to my foster mom or adoptive mom, whatever you want to call her. I just call her my mom. And we went to the Open Door, and the Open Door told us to go to the hospital, and because they said I'd be placed in a rehab facility from there. I ended up going to my first rehab in Cove Forge of February 2013. So in my mind, a rehab facility was like a hospital. So you're in one building, and you go to like a large meeting group, which some are, but my concept of a rehab facility, that's what this was. And Cove Forge is not that at all. It's like a small college campus. I stayed there, wrote it out. When I moved back, all my stuff was moved in from my house to my parents' house right up the street. And all my bank cards, my car, my cell phone, all these things were taken away from me. And I was frustrated. I felt like I was a little fucking kid. I began coming to meetings. I think I can honestly say I put together 30 days. And I just wasn't sure if this is what I wanted to do. An excuse I always had in my head was I'm afraid of the person that I'll become if I get clean, however ridiculous that sounds. Just for today, like my character defects, like I hung on to them for dear life because they were my survival tools, like through life. Never opening up, never telling people how I really feel. Just kind of blending in. That's just what I did through life. I coasted, blended in. If you liked blue, I liked blue. So came here. Got a sponsor. I claimed a sponsor. Never called them. I got a home group. Like I said, I claimed a home group. I just didn't do what this program has now taught me to do. Within a couple months, I was just back out the door. This meeting in particular, I remember being here high, wanting to stop using, but I didn't know how, because I didn't know how to open my mouth and say it. But yeah, went on another not long run, just a couple months, up until September. I just finally had enough, man. I couldn't stand to look in the mirror. I hated the person I became. Nobody wanted to be around me, including myself. So I finally called back to the Open Door, to the lady that got me placed a few months before that. And I went to Greenbrier. But all this time, I still didn't admit. My family thought I was clean, except for one person that I was still running around with. Thankfully, he's still here today. I called this guy up. I was like, hey, man, I'm going to rehab. Can you give me a ride to the Open Door? Because I don't know if they still do this, but the rehab facility came and picked me up from there, or they drove me there. I don't know how it worked, but I got there. She was like, yeah, man. He was like, I've known you've been using. I was just waiting for you to get honest. So I went to rehab with a garbage bag full of clothes. I got there on a Friday the 13th. And it wasn't until Monday that my caseworker informed my family that I was in rehab and I wasn't dead. I'm sure they're a little bit upset. And sometime that week, I was in contact with my foster mom. She was just like, look, like, you're not welcome back. Like, figure it out. So I was like, what the hell do I do now? I was ready to, I was just going to leave. Greenbrier's in Washington, PA, which is an hour and a half, almost 2 hours from here. I was ready to walk out with my four outfits in my garbage bag. Yeah, I didn't know anybody. I was scared. So I finally sat with myself and, like, got honest. And, like, this, I put myself here. All of my actions got me to where I'm at. I made everybody around me hate me and not want to be around me. So talked to a couple counselors in there, and they calmed me down. I finally sat down and stayed and started to listen a little bit. Somebody I was speaking with before the meeting mentioned somebody's name. There's this guy. His name's Doug B. You know, I was sitting in the back. Like, I didn't really wasn't sure if I wanted to be there. Wasn't sure if I wanted to be clean, but I had nowhere else to go. So I'm in the back with my head down, feeling like shit. And this guy gets up and he's screaming. I can't even imitate his voice, so I'm not even gonna try. But I don't know what he said, but it got my attention, and it was attracting to me that, like, this guy was just so happy to be alive. And he was talking about spirituality, not necessarily religion, because I've struggled with that all my life. So, I mean, I believe in something. There's something out there. Like, I use God as a lack of a better term, but God's been working in my life long before I even understood it. I mean, I still don't completely understand it, but God put these people in my when I say people and I'm pointing up the street, I'm referring to the family that adopted me in my life for a reason. I mean, they showed me tough love. They said, hey, man, you're not welcome home. Figure it out. So while I was in this rehab facility, and after I heard Doug freak out on everybody, it kind of turned me around a little bit. Where I came and I sat up front, I was really paying attention, and when they seen that I kind of did a 180, they suggested this three-quarter house that that there's this foundation for. So I was applying, because I was trying to get into a halfway house, because again, I had nowhere to go. The job that I had before that, I made too much money, so they said that I didn't qualify for insurance. So I was really up in arms. I was like, I don't know what the fuck to do. I got an extra week to stay, county funded, to stay an extra week in the rehab facility, and I applied for this foundation. It's for specifically for men, because it's a three-quarter house for men that conditionally, you don't have the funds to move in a three-quarter house, you don't qualify for health insurance, and you don't have the family support. Check, check, check. I had an interview, and they paid for my first month's rent at this three-quarter house. And as long as I stayed clean, followed all the rules, they paid for the second month as well. So allowed me to get back on my feet. Get a job, start working, have some money saved up for the next couple months. And I don't know if anybody's familiar with Washington, but it's called the Lion's House in Washington, PA. It's a great house. If you ever want to experience some humility. Live in a house with 25 other guys. Can't take a shower when you want to. Can't go and make yourself something to eat when you want to. So it was my first experience with communal living, but it was great, and I wouldn't change it for the world. So I was implanted in this house. I had 30 some days clean, so I had the least amount of clean time. Everybody had at least a year or more at the time when I moved in, so I feel like I already had a foot in the door there, and I got introduced to some really, really great guys that are still in my life today. Actually, my current sponsor. Yeah, man. Like, still, I was in that house. I was just going through the motions because I didn't have anywhere else to go. The fake it till you make it phrase definitely applied to me in this situation. Still not knowing if I wanted to stay clean, I still went to the meetings because it was required of the house. I don't know where it happened. But just continuing to hit these meetings and hearing speakers and a whole bunch of aha moments where, like, you know, I hear somebody tell my story, then I can relate so much. And I just thought it was crazy that I'd go to these meetings and people were happy and laughing, and I'm miserable as fuck sitting in this corner. And I finally realized, after hearing somebody speak, it wasn't my idea, that I can choose. Do I want to continue to be unhappy and miserable, or do I want to implant myself and go sit and figure out how these people were so happy? So I took a chance and I opened up, and I told them a little bit about myself. They told me a little bit about themselves, and I started to develop a relationship with these guys. And come to find out, like, these dudes are some heavy hitters. My grand sponsor has 30-some years. My sponsor is coming up on 10. And they started a lot of meetings. I actually had the privilege to go through the process of starting a meeting. That's an experience. Yeah, man. I'm not going to say I was able to stay clean because I moved out of this area, but it definitely helped for me. I know I take myself everywhere I go, but the geographical change definitely helped out for me. Because for me, I commend anyone that's from Indiana that's able to stay clean in the area that you're from. Because I know it's hard to go anywhere without seeing somebody that you know that you used to run with. So for me, that's what I needed. Still to this day, I don't think I have to look through it now, but I don't think there's one person in my phone that uses. So, like, even if I had the urge to use, I don't think I would even know where to start. And going back to the first attempt at getting clean here, like, I was so new. Like, I still had all those people. I knew where to go and who to get it from. Like, I didn't even have to call them. I could just show up at their door. So that separation and now the time away from it is a blessing. I've had so many crazy experiences through this journey in recovery, and I'm still in contact with the family that provides the foundation for the house that I moved into. Every year they put on a benefit dinner for her son. His name was Austin, and he was 2 weeks shy of having his first year clean. And he went back out, he relapsed, and he died the first time he used. So his family's pretty well off, but and so they decided they were going to make a memorial fund for him. It still goes on today, like that house is still in existence, and so is the foundation. So I owe a large portion of my recovery to the foundation, I feel, as well as this program. Because it put me here. It put me with people that know how to stay clean. Because I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to be a man. I came into meetings, like I said, miserable. I had to learn meeting etiquette. Like I had to learn that I sit down, I shut up, I put my phone down, so I'm not tempted. Because we're all addicted to our phones. So that was first. First thing off the bat, I had to put my phone away. Because it's not necessarily you're gonna miss something. And I've missed a lot of things early on. But I was finally able to put my phone down and listen to people. I had to learn how to speak in a meeting because early on I thought it was just me complaining, which it probably was a lot. Me living in a three-quarter house with a bunch of other dudes. But yeah, and my sponsorship family, they're very, very big in service. So I wasn't asked, I was told that I was doing certain things. And I was taught the most important level of service is your home group, whether it be opening the doors, making the coffee, just having the doors open for a suffering addict coming in and showing them that this is a safe place and people's lives changing here. And I experienced it myself, and I seen it amongst everybody going on around me. I've seen a lot of people come, I've seen a lot of people go, people that aren't here anymore. And I have fun in recovery, man. Like if I wasn't having fun, I probably still wouldn't be here. We go and do things. My sponsorship family's big, and I'm finding out today it's even bigger than I thought it was. Twice a year we do a sponsorship family dinner, I guess you'd say. We plan a date and we all go to like a Golden Corral. They reserve a little section for us and we just fuck it up. I mean, but it's cool. Like, I like doing things like that. We go to pirate games. I don't know, I just never thought like you could have so much fun in recovery. I mean, I got it when I got it, but like, I wish I would have got it a lot sooner. I feel like I wasted some time, as most of us think that whenever you finally get your shit together. But I'm here now and I'm making the best of it. I'm able to be here for family. I'm able to be a friend. I'm able to be a son. I'm able to be a boyfriend. Now we're on that topic. I through my addiction, I did some bad things, man. My brother hid his engagement ring in his room, and I pawned his engagement ring off to get high. And, I felt pretty shitty when I finally got clean. And, 2 years ago in April, I was in his wedding. And the only reason he talks to me is because I made amends with him and I was able to man up to the wrong that I'd done. I can go on and on about a whole bunch of different things. As far as that, but my life is good today, and it's all because of this program. I have a life worth living today because of Narcotics Anonymous. Pretty hard on myself. I don't make as many meetings as I would like to, based on my work schedule and me trying to build a life. But I was taught early on and by my sponsor. So when I was here attending meetings, you say, I'm an addict, my name is Dane. And I hear my sponsorship family, everyone says I'm an addict, so-and-so, whatever your name is. I learned that before I'm Dane, the son, the brother, the uncle, the boyfriend, I'm Dane the addict. And if I don't take care of that first, all the other disappear. So that's why I refer to myself as an addict before my name. I mean, it's hard. Like, for me, my life is, life in recovery has been an ongoing, surrender and recommitting. Because it's very hard to have a balance of all of the above, having social life, having recovery, and work. I don't know if people do it. We're here, and we just make it happen. Yeah, I've been through breakups clean. I've been through had back surgery 2 years ago. I didn't think I was gonna make it through that clean. That sucked. If never get back surgery, don't do it. But yeah, so I stayed up here with my grandmother and attended a couple meetings. I had a few around 2 years ago. I was hunched over and I had a little cane. But yeah, talking to people, I was able to make it through that without taking anything. I spoke to the anesthesiologist before I went under, and she was like, thank you for telling me. So we got all the narcotics out of there. And leading up to it, I fantasized about the morphine drip, waking up and just keep in it. But that wasn't there either. But yeah, man, like, I know my thinking is sick. my perception of reality is so skewed, I can make myself believe anything. The lady that spoke at one, she said, my first thought's wrong. My second thought's wrong. Usually my third thought's wrong. So I usually have to run all those things by somebody first. And I don't try to complicate God's will. If I have to second guess it, I know it's my will, not God's will. In anything that I do. So. I don't know. I was also taught some service work's very, very important. Keeps me clean. And you're showing the newcomer that like this does work. And I was taught to stick to the basics. Because everything that I've had to do to get through any situation, I've learned in the first 90 days. So if I stick to the basics, I never have to get back to them. And that's not always easy. Like I said, my experience in recovery has been an ongoing process of recommitting and finding balance, which I'm still struggling with. So if anybody has suggestions on that, I'd be more than glad to take them. Having a sponsor, being able to sponsor other guys is a blessing. Sometimes I feel like I want my sponsees to stay clean more than they do. So I kind of get myself in a little bit of trouble there, because you start to build a relationship with these guys. And I know for me, I was just so desperate when I came around. If you told me to do a headstand in the corner for an hour, I was doing it. Just because I didn't want to go back to the life that I was living when I finally decided that I wanted to stay clean. For me, it took nobody in my life, nobody wanted to be around me, and it was very, very hard to get past my own ego that I need help doing this. And as a man, And I think a lot of us struggle with that. Me trying to be macho, me thinking that I don't need help from anybody. Trying not to swear, but it just comes out. I curse like a sailor. That I'm a pussy if I tell you that my feelings are hurt or that I'm not okay today. But through some steps and talking to my sponsor and coming to meetings, like it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to have crazy thoughts. It's as long as I don't act upon them. Sorry to tell you, for the newcomer, like you still are gonna have thoughts of using. It's what you do with that. I can choose to just hold that in and let that fester. And the longer I hold it in, like the more and more that's gonna become appealing. And I've done that, but I was luckily I actually opened my mouth before I actually went in and put the action. Like at my brother's wedding, everybody was drinking. It looked really, really appealing. I made a decision. I said, fuck it, I'm just going to go grab a white key tag when I get back. As I'm approaching the bar, my grandma comes up to me and asks me where I'm going. I said, oh, I'm going to get a drink. She just thought I was getting like a Pepsi or Mountain Dew or something. But and then I thought about what came out of my mouth. And I thought, the only reason I'm here in this wedding is because of recovery. And unfortunately, I think it was a huge growing moment for me because I went to go try to call my sponsor. And, of course, we're somewhere where you get no cell phone or service. So it was just between me and the God of my understanding. Talking myself off that ledge. Thankfully I didn't do it, and we're still here. But I've had a whole bunch of experiences, especially with helping other guys, talking them off the ledge. Being able to sponsor somebody else is such a blessing. That somebody sees something in you that they want in itself is great. And I owe it all to this program. Last time I spoke in regards to this area was at the Unity Retreat. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. It was 2 years ago, and that was probably one of the lowest parts in my life in recovery. So shortly after my brother's wedding, I was just going through a crazy breakup with my ex, and during that time I was getting lost in the property and prestige part of life, and I was trying to build all these things, and I broke up with this lady, and she took everything. And ironically, my topic was blessings of recovery. And that was a blessing in itself. I was able to see the people that I have in the relationships and self-acceptance that I found in recovery, non-materialistic things. And I still get caught up in that stuff. And I finally learned how to open up and tell and talk to people, talk about my feelings. I don't just have to blend in. Like I know what I like today. I'm a kind, loving man. I wouldn't fight you if I didn't have to, but don't tell my ego that. I got this inflated ego, like I'm this big tough guy that if you look at me the wrong way, I'm going to beat you down, but that's not me at all. And, that's what I wanted to perceive to be all those years. And, I don't know, I just had to put the chemical down to realize who I really am. Yeah, like I said, I want to come around more, so I'm going to make an effort, and those of you who know me, please hold me to that. Trying to think of more, but my sponsor always told me if I speak for more than a half hour, the rest of it's probably lies, and I'm looking down at this and it's 35, so I don't think I started to lie yet, so we're good. I know it's not getting any better out there. I know I don't want to use, thoughts still come, but I was taught early on that I got in a routine of calling my sponsor daily, even when things aren't going on. Because if I can't pick up the phone when things are going good, I'll never do it when things are going bad. So if I have any advice for the newcomers, just give yourself a chance. It's never as bad as you think it is. You'll get through it. Time takes time. Time heals a lot of things, man. I thought, how I said my family ripped me off. It took a good 6 months to a year for me to be allowed to go to my mom's, and it took 2.5 years for my foster dad to even want to speak to me on the phone. Every key tag I got, you know, that first year, I was very proud of those key tags. So when I'd pick up, I'd write a letter and I'd mail it to my dad. About a week later, I'd get a return to sender on it. The first one he accepted was my 2 year, multiple years of recovery key tag, and he called me and he said that he was proud of me. And back with the acceptance, that's all I ever really wanted all my life, and I come here and I find it. Most of you are strangers in here, but I feel more comfortable with you than I do with a lot of normies. Even a lot of my family, because not all of my family knows what I've been through these past couple of years. And I don't know, like, you got meeting lists on your phone, you can go anywhere, and I feel comfortable. I don't know, I feel like I'm just scratching for stuff now, so, the message is hope and the promise is freedom. If you're struggling, get with somebody, talk to somebody about it. Like, it gets better, and you will get through it. I'm an addict named Dave.